This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Now, full time on Radio City Talk.
Good afternoon, or good evening, I should say. 6:05 across Merseyside. I'm Connor Phillips. Thank you very much for joining me. Something I've been talking about right throughout the afternoon, and I haven't really been able to touch on it properly because there's been very strict, specific embargoes in this information, and rightfully so. Right. Former Liverpool striker Fernando Torres believes he was portrayed as a traitor following his controversial departure to Chelsea 5 years ago. And the Spaniard says he feels betrayed by those in power at Anfield at the time, not least when it emerged publicly that the player had verbally requested to leave the club. So therefore, many Liverpool fans thought that this was a purely Fernando Torres' decision to walk away and head to Chelsea for £50 million. This has been covered extensively in a brand new book from Simon Hughes, Ring of Fire, Liverpool FC into the 21st Century, The Player's Stories. A brilliant forward by Steven Gerrard in there as well. And I'm delighted to say that Simon Hughes joins me this evening. Simon, this is literally fireworks within a book.
Yeah, I thought you might say that, Connor. Yeah, I arranged to meet Fernando a couple of months ago, so I've kind of been sitting on this for a while now. He's obviously gone back to Atletico Madrid, so I went over to Madrid to meet him. I always thought that there's more to this story than maybe was portrayed at the time. So what I approached Fernando's agent and explained to him that it was going to be part of a book. I think you realise that there was an opportunity there to maybe settle, you know, a few scores, I suppose. Because within the context of a book, you can go into a lot more detail around, you know, the situation at Liverpool at the time. I think sometimes you forget just how mad it kind of was that period leading up to Fernando's departure. When the takeover happened with FFG buying the club from Hicks and Gillette. So I think he realised the benefit of doing an interview in the book rather than doing maybe an interview in a newspaper where, admittedly, you know, obviously I work in newspapers and sometimes there isn't the space in newspapers to get into the context and the detail and explain the situation at the time. And obviously, you know, I think he had quite a lot of strong things to say. I mean, I know the press release has gone out today, but there's a lot more to it than that. Yeah, so I think it was quite strange, really, because when after Fernando, he hadn't been playing too well, but you could visibly see his kind of relief, I think, after I'd spoken to him in Madrid. This was in March, and he bizarrely kind of went on a run of goal-scoring form afterwards. I think he's a lot more kind of fragile. Well, not fragile necessarily, but, you know, I think he certainly does think about things deeply, perhaps more deeply than people think many footballers do. You know, he admitted to me later on in the book, which obviously, you know, people have to read by buying it, you know, the kind of this situation at Liverpool, the way it all ended, it played on his mind for a long time.
Because he was a fan's favourite. He was a fan's favourite. Like the song itself, Fernando Torres, Liverpool number 9. I went out and I bought a number 9 shirt myself. I have a signed Fernando Torres jersey, and to this day, it's still one of my most prized possessions. So let's just see if we can sort of at least structuralise the timeline, right? So first of all, Fernando Torres is there, and let me see, it's between Damien Comoli and also a few other people in place like Christian Perslow. So see if you can give us a highlight of exactly what happened.
Well, I mean, Fernando's not trying to claim, you know, that he was blameless in this process. What he's trying to do is highlight the things that were going on around him, and ultimately the feeling that he had that Liverpool were quite happy to sell him. You know, it was viewed at the time when he was sold that you know, this was all engineered by Torres, and that, you know, he kind of forced Liverpool's hands when, you know, for a 6 month period really he was left feeling that Liverpool were quite happy to sell him. And you know, he admitted, you know, he kind of initiated the initial discussion that he had with Roy Hodgson and Christian Perslow in the summer of 2010, where he was, you know, there's a lot of speculation in the press about his future, saying that Liverpool would need to sell their best players because of the highly publicised financial problems at the club. So he went to them and asked, you know, he said, look, is this going to happen? Am I going to be sold? Because he was obviously aware that, you know, he just won the World Cup. I mean, he'd had a not a great season for Liverpool, but he was obviously still viewed as one of the world's great strikers. There were other clubs interested in him, something he admitted. But, you know, he was told then that Liverpool wouldn't be able to sell their best players because the club was in the process of being sold. And to sell Liverpool, you know, Liverpool had to have value on the club, so selling the best players wasn't a good idea at the time. And then within a month, Javier Mascherano was sold, and he felt let down by that. He started the season injured. He had to play games because there was no other option, really. He played a lot of games where he's injured. And I think a lot of people saw him kind of, you know, his body, you know, that there was, at the time, there was almost like a weekly analysis of his body language, when the reality was he'd carried over an injury from the World Cup. He wasn't fully fit, and he couldn't play to the levels that he wanted to. And cause we all know how strikers are. If you don't feel right, some of them, you know, just kind of replaying history now with Daniel Sturridge. Some might say that, you know, if they're not quite right, it really does show when they play.
Mm. So he was then part of the setup. Mascherano had gone. Yeah. Kenny Dalglish had been brought in to replace Roy Hodgson. And then from that moment on, it became a situation where he felt he had no other option.
Yeah, well, he met with Damien Comolli, who came in as the sporting director, and it was outlined to Torres there that basically Liverpool were going to go down a different route from there in under FSG, that they wanted to sign younger players and build that way. And he felt that, you know, not so long before, Liverpool had almost won the Champions League again. They were close to winning the title, and suddenly they wanted to rip everything up and start all over again. And he was saying, well, I'm 27 now, you know, should I, you know, this is at a time where he wants to admittedly win things. He'd left Atletico Madrid, which is his boyhood club, to come and win things at Liverpool. When he joined Liverpool, they just lost in the Champions League final 3.5 years later. You know, they were sailing, you know, in the bottom half of the league, if we're being honest. And then, obviously, he regaled his frustrations to Kenny Dalglish when he came in. And although Kenny, I think, he says in the book, you know, kind of told him he wanted to stay. He didn't really give him the reasons why he wanted to stay. He felt that from the discussions with Perslow and Damien Comolli, that the reasons that Liverpool wanted to stay weren't football reasons. They were purely financial reasons. So that upset him, I think. And then from within a couple of days of his discussions with Kenny Dalglish, where he said to him, look, I want to... you know, is this right that what we're doing at this time? He said there was a consensus on both sides that, you know, if he was to stay, then great. If he was to go, then great also. But he kind of felt like, you know, there was a decision time for both the club and himself. And he said within kind of, you know, a day, 24 hours, 48 hours, it was released that he'd verbally asked for a transfer. Now, he went to all the people concerned without his agent. You know, he was kind of done in confidence and in trust. And then to find that it was released by somebody, presumably not from his, certainly not from him, and certainly not from his camp, that he'd asked for a transfer verbally. That was a sign to him that Liverpool wanted to sell him, another sign. So in the end, he was left feeling like, you know, I have to go, basically. You know, that the trust is, you know, there's obviously big, important trust issues there. So, I mean, later on in the book, obviously that's not been in the kind of the press release today, but he does go into a lot of detail about how that affected him, you know, when he went to Chelsea and admitted, you know, that he couldn't find his best form because he kind of regretted and held remorse over the way things had gone. Now, this isn't a revision of history. This is just, you know, I think Torres sees his opportunity to kind of to defend himself a little bit, because he saw the guns, you know, were pointing at him at the time, when the reality was, you know, there was a lot more to it than people realised.
So would it be fair to suggest that there was some sort of contract drawn up between himself and Liverpool about this information? Because for literally 3, 4, 5 years, Torres always said, listen, the truth will come out someday. Mm-hmm. I can't give you that truth now. And the story in itself, as much as it is dramatic, it's not necessarily one of those stories that is going to rock the footballing world. Why didn't he come out much earlier with it?
Yeah, well, he you know, he said, he admitted to me again that at the time he'd signed for Chelsea, and, you know, if he'd come out kind of complaining about, you know, the way Liverpool had handled the process beforehand, he felt that that wouldn't have done himself any favours at Chelsea. I mean, he admits, you know, he was thinking about his career. He's not trying to play, you know, I'm the innocent one in this. He was saying, I had to think about the future in Chelsea, and I think he just wanted to try and get through that period. But ultimately, you know, I think you could tell the way he played at Chelsea. You know, people kind of say that it was great business. You know, it probably was, you know, good business by Liverpool. You know, you could argue either side. You know, 50 million for a player who never hit the same heights, you know, is good business. But fundamentally, I just feel that he felt now was the time. You know, he's coming towards the end of his career now. He thought it was the right kind of platform to speak about it for the reasons that I mentioned earlier. Mm. He said, I'm not interested in releasing another autobiography or anything like that. So, I think it was a combination of those factors. You know, the dust has settled. He said that the last time he went to Liverpool as a player in the Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher charity match, he got a really good reception from Liverpool supporters. He's very conscious of the way he's perceived by Liverpool supporters. He understands why a lot of people at the time really, you know, kind of went against him. You know, they were burning his shirt as he left the training ground. He can remember that, you know, very clearly. And he just felt like, you know, that now was the time to kind of maybe just set the record straight a little bit and explain that, yeah, he obviously did consider leaving, but ultimately it wasn't just him forcing it.
And does he have any regrets leaving? Does he think that it was the wrong thing, right thing to do? And how does he feel about Liverpool now?
Well, he was quite clear about that, because he said, you know, he originally left Atletico Madrid. I mean, people forget that that was his boyhood club. You know, to make that move in the first place was a big decision, a very difficult decision to make. He said it was very, I remember his words to me, it was very difficult to leave Atletico, but it wasn't hard to choose Liverpool. And I think in that instance, he obviously chose Liverpool, which was a club that, you know, that was never going to upset any of the Atletico fans. Now, unfortunately, you know, I think he must have known always that going to Chelsea, you know, people weren't going to be happy about that, you know, irrespective of who was doing what and who was forcing certain issues. But ultimately, Chelsea were the only club that bid for Fernando Torres at that time, so that there was nowhere else to go.
It's just strange the time frame which it happened, because it was a very quick sale, and there was also the debacle with Andy Carroll and spending the money really, really late. With such it sounds like it was a slightly drawn out process. Was he even more frustrated with the fact that it was sort of squashed into a couple of days towards the transfer window?
Yeah, well, I think as a kind of just detail there, I think it's easy to forget that this kind of was building over a period of 6 months. I suppose he said to me, if everything was going well at Liverpool, you know, he'd never have considered this at all. I mean, it wasn't that he wanted to leave; he wanted to win. You know, he said that at that time, when you know, Spain with the reigning champions of world football, he won in the European Championships, all his, you know, his teammates in the Spanish national team were winning every week, playing for Barcelona or Real Madrid or, you know, other English clubs. He said that obviously became quite difficult, because you're kind of playing for Liverpool, who were out of the Champions League, miles down in the league. And he said when he was younger, that was what he was motivated by, winning. It wasn't, you know, the idea that he came to Liverpool just because it's Liverpool and Liverpool's great history and everything else. He said, I came because Liverpool were very close to winning. And he said that was the decision that I took when I, you know, went to Chelsea as well. Yeah, I think, you know, to answer your question at the beginning, I think there's certainly a few regrets there. That he certainly, you know, missed playing with Steven Gerrard, you know, who he's still, you know, very close to now. And he missed the fact that, you know, that those first few years at Liverpool were so good. He said they were his happiest times in football. He'd never been happier, you know, in his career, even playing for Atletico Madrid, being back there now. He said, you know, it was unexplainable the reason why Liverpool fans, you know, love them so much. He said he really appreciates that, and he understands why they're ultimately, you know, going to be angry about, you know, the manner of his departure. But ultimately, Liverpool, this wasn't something that happened overnight. This was something that had been coming for 6 months, and I had somebody at Liverpool at the time, you know, being strong enough to deal with it. You know, it may have been avoidable, but unfortunately, you know, again, we forget the madness of what was going on. You know, Liverpool were, you know, on the verge of, you know, financial administration. They were having a takeover. There were all different people involved. You know, it kind of got out of hand, really. I think that fundamentally, you know, explains why things happened the way they did.
He did say he got a good reception when he went back to Anfield, which was good to see for any Torres fans. But what do you think his legacy is going to be at Anfield? And do you think that's going to improve or indeed change because of this news?
Well, I think that, you know, clearly time has healed, healed the feeling. I mean, he was on his way to becoming one of the club's greatest goal scorers. I think it would have been interesting to see what would have happened had Liverpool not signed Luis Suarez as well. I know you mentioned Andy Carroll before, but Suarez, many will view as an improvement on Torres. But, you know, it's very easy to forget these little things. You know, over the period of time when Torres was playing for Liverpool, you know, he was unstoppable with Steven Gerrard. And I think what he's hoping from this interview is, I don't think he wants, certainly doesn't want people to feel sorry for him and think, oh, poor old Fernando Torres. I think the feeling was he just wanted people to realise that it wasn't as straightforward as I wanted to leave, I wanted to win. There was lots of other things that were going on, lots of other people involved. You know, and had things been handled differently, perhaps there could have been a different outcome. Now, I know people will say it was a great deal for Liverpool. You know, he ended up, you know, kind of becoming a bit of a dud for Chelsea, a bit of a laughing stock even at times. But he is somebody as a person. You know, we view them as footballers first and not people, really. You know, and I think he very much, when he feels like, you know, when he feels good, he performs better. It's quite simple as that. There were times when Liverpool, when you could visibly see that he wasn't, you know, those last 18 months, he was clearly kind of struggling with the disappointments that were going on around him. I don't think he kind of would ever describe himself as the type of player to kind of drag Liverpool out of, you know, out of a mess, really. I think fundamentally he is quite a brittle character, and, you know, I think that definitely played on his mind when he was at Chelsea, and maybe explained a little bit why, you know, as he got older as well, why he couldn't perform to the level that he did.
And we'll let you go very shortly, Simon, but before that, you said that when he left the interview, he almost looked like he was a happier man. Do you think this is some sort of closure for Fernando Torres?
I don't want to kind of exaggerate the impact of it, but I did visibly see like how he was relaxed, certainly more relaxed after the interview, and in the weeks and months after, bizarrely his form did improve. And, you know, I think we're going back to kind of, you know, the Torres body language, you know, that many people kind of analysed to death when he was at Liverpool. But, you know, I was obviously watching him closely afterwards, and he seemed to kind of regain, you know, it's like baggage had been, he got a lot of baggage off his shoulders.
Yeah, there's literally no point in me and you sitting talking about this any longer. What people should do, Simon Hughes, is go and buy the book for a more in-depth, fuller look at this. It's being serialised at the moment in the Liverpool Echo, I believe, but also the entire book is available to buy. Tell us about the book, where we can get it, and how we can get the full Fernando Torres story, as well as a selection of other player stories throughout the 21st century.
Yeah, it's the book's being released. It's called Ring of Fire. It's being released on the Thursday, the 25th of August, and it'll be available everywhere.
Liverpool FC into the 21st century, the player stories. A nice forward by, who's this guy? Some guy called, is it Steven Gerrard? Steven Gerrard? He's got the forward in that as well. Simon, listen, it's been great to talk to you. It's been great to get an insight and to finally sort of crack this ever so slightly, because I said it earlier on today, I still have my signed Fernando Torres jersey. It's in a frame now, and it has pride of place on the wall, and I make absolutely no bones about doing that. I've no shame about that, because he truly was one of Liverpool's best strikers.